Hello and welcome to In Her Corner, a podcast dedicated to celebrating and empowering women working at every level of sport, on and off the field. I'm your host, Lisely Satali, and today I've got a really great guest all the way from New York, who does a really extremely interesting job, a job I could only dream of if I've had half of her creative talent, but I do not. So instead, we're going to dive into her world and find out all about how she got to where she is now. We've got the wonderful Carrie Sekender, who is the principal and creative director of Butter Studio. Hi, Carrie. How are you doing?
Hi, Lisely. I'm great. Super excited to be here.
No, thank you for making the time. I know you're super busy at the moment, so it's great that you dropped in. So as I alluded to there, obviously you do a really interesting job that sits at so many great intersections, but also a lot of intersections where women are largely underrepresented, which is in a creative space and specifically creative working on a lot of sports, media brands, and also the fact that you own your own studio that you founded in New York. So I just want to take some time to find out what your journey was to lead you to this great point that you're in, and the kind of work that you've done, interestingly, to try and challenge this sort of, let's say, hangover we've got of sport being defined really in a male lens. So yeah, if you just take it away by telling us a little bit about what was your initial inspiration and interest in sport to where you are now in the creative world.
Sure. So I grew up playing sports my whole childhood. I started playing soccer when I was 9 years old and ran cross country. I played field hockey. I played tennis. So sport was always a really big part of my life as a young girl. And through sport, I developed all the things we all know and love about sports. So community, empowerment, physical strength, mental strength, the ability to work as a team, all of these amazing things that we learn through sport. And then as an adult, I've continued to practice sport. The past 4 years, boxing has been my main thing, and I've been, you know, going to the gym every day, except during COVID, where that hasn't been possible.
So
sport has always been central to my being, and it became very clear to me that I had this special skill set as a designer and a creative director to really shape how people think about sport and athletics and all things related, and to use that to push forward my own personal values. So women's empowerment, empowerment of queer people, BIPOC, and really hone in on designing for sport and adding a new voice to the industry. Because as you mentioned, in my industry, actually, only 0.1% of creative agencies are owned by women.
Which is staggering. It's so staggering.
It really is.
Yeah, particularly for a discipline, right, that is often gendered. The creative and arts are often gendered as female. But when you actually look at sort of, let's say, the positions of leadership and power and ownership, they're actually inherently male. So I've always found that quite an interesting paradox. And just before we track forward as well, I'm talking about how, you know, you really wanted to kind of create this space and way of using your talent and your love for sport and creative to challenge those norms and to try and get better representation of different groups. I just wanted, for the benefit of a lot of the audience who listen, who are not in North America, to define what BIPOC means, because there's different terms used. So for everybody listening, that by that group is Black Indigenous People of Color, just to be clear, because in the UK and in Europe, we use a slightly different term. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody was on track to understand all the great groups that you are looking to really ensure are empowered and represented in the sports space. So when you are sort of setting up the kind of business you are, and you are very aware that you're going into a space where you're going to be a minority within a minority, how do you deal with that, with the challenges that that brings up? What were the things that kind of typically you came up against as a challenge, and how have you dealt with them to overcome them to have Butter as such a successful business?
You know, it's really not direct. It's comes into play in ways that it's not easy to pinpoint and say, This is why there's such a gender inequity in the industry. It's all so many factors go into it. And the question is really, why are there majority women in design schools and young designers? But then when you get to the top levels of creative director, which is 3% female, and owners of agencies, 0.1%, why is the leadership not equal at all? And I think it's a lot of factors. It's social conditioning to automatically trust men and feel comfortable paying them a significant investment for their services. It's women leaving the workforce without proper support when they have kids. It's so many nuanced factors that it's hard to say how I've experienced it very concretely. But I do know that it exists, and just by us being in this space and using not only our work to work with women-owned businesses and women in sports, but our internal team is mostly women. And really, as a leader of a company, creating a space where I can show them that they can have their own business, they can become creative directors as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's that it being sort of intentional about modeling what you want to see on the outside, right? By showing that it works, by demonstrating the value and the credibility through your own practice, right? It's literally putting your money where your mouth is, which is something that a lot of businesses are now going to have to do. And we'll talk about that with a sort of societal shifts that we're seeing for the better, but also that are bringing up a lot of tension. So just sort of trying to build onto when you first got your first design job working on sport-related creative, what was that experience for you like? Because you talked there about how there's this inherent sort of unquestioned trust about men and giving men more opportunities. How did you navigate those spaces before you set up, obviously, your own business where you can be a little bit more in control of that? How did you meet those challenges there?
I have an interesting perspective because I have a very unique career path. I have actually really only worked for female creative directors,
Yeah,
so
wow.
which is, I
Rare.
know, I had
Extremely
very
rare.
rare.
Yeah. But awesome,
And
but completely awesome, and probably what has given you this sort of the belief system and the drive and the ability to set up your own, right? Because you saw it very, very early on in your career, I guess.
totally, yes. And so I would say, I don't think I even really became aware of the disparity until I started my own company. Because when I was working for other agencies, I was really focused on doing a really good job as a creative and not so much focused on, running the business. So I didn't see it as much.
And so what was the point that sort of was the if you like the moment where you became suddenly aware of this as being a challenge within the industry, let's say, rather than presently what you'd experience? What was that first moment where you thought, ah, here lies the problem? Where was that moment? Or was they not a particular moment? Was it more from experiences of the people you've hired sharing with them? Was it more from clients trying to engage with them? Where was that moment that you became sort of aware that this is actually quite an immovable issue to some extent, let's say?
I think it's a culmination of a lot of experiences. And I took me a little while to really become aware of it. I actually, for my undergraduate degree, studied women and gender studies. So a feminist lens has always been part of my worldview. And
It's great.
even though I still was blind to just how wide the gap is for a while. And there are moments that made it very clear where it's, either we're pitching against other agencies that are owned by men, and then if we lose the pitch, it's, wondering what we could have done differently, if there was implicit bias at play, or if really the other one was just a better fit.
Mm-hmm.
It's been things like some female creative directors that I've had pointing out gendered things that felt really gendered to me. So even
okay.
it can even express itself when you're working for a woman.
Yeah. Like an example. Yeah. I was going to say an example would be helpful for the, for me. Yeah. It's a world I'm curious on.
Definitely. So, the example that I always think of is I was called to direct early in my career as a designer and
yeah.
how I communicated with clients. And to me,
interesting.
That's just so
loaded,
just so
very loaded. Yeah.
It just feels so obviously gendered to me
yeah.
that if I were a man, I would be seen as assertive and it would mm-hmm. be a good thing.
Yeah.
Or confident.
Yeah.
But since I'm a woman, it's, oh, you're too direct.
It becomes a negative for some reason, right? Why does
yeah.
it become a negative when you're going to be saying exactly the same points as a male counterpart would be saying, but it's about how are people used to women speaking in those spaces, right?
Absolutely. And it was a thing where I was like, do I need to add more exclamation points to my emails?
More,
you know,
sorries.
I was a bit lost.
Carrie, the trick is more sorries. I've learned a lot of sorries.
Sorries, but.
But
just,
I'm kidding. Just saying, just
yeah.
wondering.
Yep.
No, I'm kidding. Those are all bad practices to anyone listening. Do not do that. Stand firm and true in your voice. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but and it's interesting that you say that because when we've all been in different spaces where we've got those sort of feedback where it feels, as you say, very gendered and very specific to you because you're a woman or you're junior or you are a minority that doesn't typically get a seat at the table, let's say, to be able to have those conversations and challenges. How have you coped over the years in being able to stand your ground in those moments where you feel at such a deficit and at a deficit that maybe other people can't see around you? How do you communicate to make people understand and see that perspective? Because I think that's something I've certainly struggled with throughout my career to articulate that in a way that gets heard and acted on properly.
It's very challenging. It's very challenging because your message is only as strong as what your audience is willing to hear.
Mm.
So, you know, I've learned over time that there are approaches that work and those that don't.
Yeah.
When I was younger, I remember getting in a heated argument with a male colleague about
yeah.
Some sort of discrimination. I don't even remember the exact topic, but he just didn't see it. And he took it as a personal attack and it became this whole thing where it's like, I'm not responsible for making you feel comfortable in this situation.
Yeah.
But so it's a very fine line to tread because you also don't want to isolate people and you want to make
yes.
people feel comfortable getting in touch with how they can be better allies.
Yeah.
And, you know, try to help us shift the ratio. So now what I've done is speak about it with my team internally, and we have a newsletter that we run that we speak about these issues frequently.
Yeah.
And just trying to get the message out there using the platform that we have.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's such a powerful platform you have, right? Because I've always been really jealous of creative types, as I alluded to in your intro. Because if you're a musician, you can sing, you can write songs, you can play an instrument that can, you know, touch people, and music transcends cultures. But in the same way, creative art and expression and design does the same. So I just want to take some time here to just delve a little deeper into the type of design visual communication, if you like, that you have the opportunity to use. What are the things that you're really excited about it allowing you to do now that there's more of an open conversation and ownership of the fact that women's sport and women identity within sport as a vehicle hasn't been as celebrated and as incorporated as it should be? What are the sort of opportunities that you're seeing in through using your visual communication talent and resources to be able to change that?
Mm-hmm. Design and aesthetics really shape how people perceive things. So, you know, the way something is designed, whether it's a website or a soccer kit or a wine bottle or anything that we touch and feel and see in our daily life, has been designed by someone. And so and it really shapes how people view that thing.
Yeah.
So I really see it as a responsibility as a designer to use that tool, which is really powerful, shaping people's perception, for pushing forward my personal values. And that is very much advocating for women in sport. And so, you know, we've worked with organizations that are focused on women's sports.
Yeah.
And we'll continue to do so. And I think it's also really important that we don't just advocate for women on the field. We're advocating for women making the decisions behind the scenes as well. So whether it's
hugely important.
So whether it's the designer like us who would make, you know, the logo or the kit and the brand identity for a team, or for an organization, a media company, a nonprofit, a startup in sports, or whether it's the producers behind the scenes making the videos or whatever it is, if we're advocating for women, we need to do it at every level. We not just the ones who are on camera.
No, definitely. It's about making sure that all the systems that underpin, let's say, the outward experience of sport are inclusive and as reflective as possible of different women's experiences and women's ability to influence decisions that go into that investment and that mediation of sport, I think is such a good place to be at. And I think one of the things that struck me about what you were saying there was the responsibility element, because as you say, the ability you've got through a really great medium like design is to influence how people perceive things and see them. And I think one of the areas I've always been superbly interested in, and you touched on it there, was when it comes to designing uniforms, as you call them in the States, and kit, as we call them here in Europe. And I know you refer to as kit there because you had a spell in Berlin. So it's good to see that we got that through. but what have you always thought about that? Because I, you know, the moments that really like kind of I remember define my childhood was when big tournaments would come round and you would always see the kits being launched for a particular team, you know, Team USA are wearing this. And I remember, and I think we have this as a special memory in common, the 1990 World Cup. And it was the first time that I ever, 1999, sorry, gosh, 1990 was when I was born. So that would be impressive if I remembered that one. But yeah, 1999 World Cup. And I remember being so excited at seeing shirts on great players like Mia Hamm and Ambi Wambach, because it was the first time that I even became aware that they were shirts sold for women to play football. And whereas before, my only experience had been in the previous World Cup in 1998 in France, which was special to me, given part of our family are French, and seeing that fanfare around that. But it was the first time I saw it. And I thought, wow, I imagine that now as an adult, thinking back to it, the reason why no one made a big fuss about revealing the women's kits, which are, of course, such a big fashion item, which is such a huge part of women's experience of how we relate to the world through magazines and huge industries that have been targeted towards us. But suddenly, when it came to sport, it didn't matter that we were involved in that conversation and how that was styled and how they were put together. And I always thought that's been such a way that has been a missed opportunity for the sports industry to really excite and galvanize people who aren't traditional hardcore sports fans. And I wonder, does that happen, do you think? Because for years, the people who've been in those decision-making processes of creating kits, creating funfair around the kits, haven't been enough of a different diversity of thought of people and gender even.
Yeah, I think it's definitely partially that. I don't know the statistics around the gender of people designing kits, so I can't speak to that, but I can imagine it's probably has some issues with inequity like the rest of the creative field. But, you know, it's been so shaped by a male lens, the way sports look You know, if we think about team logos or uniforms, it's the aesthetic is pretty one-dimensional. And I wonder, you know, if other perspectives were doing the design and following a different path, could we see things that are really different and really exciting and not just taking a male jersey and making it for women? It's funny, it brought up this memory of mine from playing field hockey when I was in middle school, which is age 11 through 13-ish.
11, 13, I had to calculate that myself. I was like, let me think through that.
We got the boys' soccer jerseys because it was their off season.
To play hockey
And
in.
to play field hockey, yeah. And, you know, it comes from a deep place, I think, this desire to want to be shaping sport, women's sports, and really making, you know, making the game ours and thinking about it differently and, you know, following a different path. And I think that definitely starts with who's making the decisions, both at a business level, at a creative level, whether it's design or video or, you know, PR, whatever it is. It's all tied together.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think, you know, just to give an example, is there been a chance that you've had through your work to get to subvert that, to get a chance to bring a new way of thinking to that design and that experience that has helped your clients to see, you know, where maybe they were blind spots before, that they were just going down this tunnel of repeating past, let's say, replications of excluding female identity.
Oh, definitely. There's one example that comes to mind. We did a poster design for a queer women activist organization and soccer club in Paris called Les Dégommeuses. Maybe some of your audience is familiar. And one of our posters was selected as part of their campaign, and the brief was to show the diversity of women in football. And the posters, ours being one of them, were displayed all over Paris during the World Cup 2 years ago in 2019. And in galleries, and FIFA picked it up and had them on the fan zone in the center of Paris. And so that was a very tangible way where we were like, there's no one way that a woman in sport looks or should be perceived. And so that was one. And then another project that we did recently was for a new nonprofit called Women in Soccer. And the identity and the website that we created for them is really not your typical nonprofit. So we took
No, I love it. I love
inspiration.
it. And that's how I first came across you, because Courtney Leverson, who I had on this podcast, told me about you. And that's how I first became aware. And I was so excited when she told me that it was a female-led and owned creative agency that established it. Because I was like, wow, that's why it looks so different to anything else I typically see out there when they create it.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad that you found out about us that way. It was that project was a really good example of how can we think about this differently and make it really exciting and you know, something that people really want to engage with and spend time with. And as I was saying, that's our opportunity as designers is to shape how people think about things.
Definitely, definitely. And I think it's that shaping and thinking about things that allows you as well to, when you can do it visually, what's great about that moment is that there's something physically in front of people, like the posters you talked about, which I actually saw when I was in France. And I thought was interesting because, typically speaking, France is another country where it's incredibly multicultural, multiracial, and it's grown and evolved as a nation. But again, when typically anything is marketed is done with one identity and one lens. And what was nice about that campaign, as you said, it's also challenging another norm within that society through a really powerful cultural moment like a World Cup, where it's bringing together different nationalities that are being seen as inherently positive, whereas to other times it can be gendered in a negative politic that it gets caught up in. And so that, and again, I think that's, those are the really great moments that sport has, right? It gets a chance to make a commentary on a social commentary, let's say, on important issues around representation and identity.
Definitely. And that's one of the reasons that I love working in sport, is because of the power it has to shape culture and really foster equity and political change. And really, you know, people look up to athletes as if they're superhuman, because in certain ways they really are.
Yeah, I was going to say, some I have to say yes, because it makes me feel better.
Why can't I run that fast?
Exactly. They were born in a different gene pool. That's what I tell myself, and then I carry on eating my Cheetos.
This reminds me of another project that we did, and this was a self-initiated project that we did, where we interviewed 10 female Olympic athletes right at the beginning of COVID.
Yeah,
when the Olympics were postponed.
Yeah.
And we were just really motivated to hear how they were doing. You know, their dreams are on hold. Some of them, this was a massive change in their plan. Some of them had been preparing to retire, or, you know, it was supposed to be their first Olympics. And so we interviewed these athletes across nations and sport. And what we did is we asked them about just their day-to-day. We asked them very specific questions around, what are three things that you have smelled during quarantine? Or very specific questions around their aesthetic experience, but then also questions around mindset and their mental health practices, and also training, how they're staying in shape, all of that. And what we did was we created a visual narrative. So we created illustration and motion graphics that were summaries or our visual interpretation of what we heard.
Yeah.
And we created a campaign called She's Going to Tokyo.
Yeah.
That was launched on Instagram and got picked up by a bunch of press. And it was a really nice way to make it very personal and tell a story about a really important moment in time.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I would definitely encourage everybody. I'm certainly going to go straight after this to go and check it out. So thank you for telling us about that, because I think it's those moments where you visualize a lived experience that I think it really hits home to people and has that ability to have some resonance and a real tangible learning from someone else's way, and particularly athletes, as you say, because they offer us this really great escapism, but also aspirational vehicle. So it's great that you got a chance to visualize that. And just sort of kind of as we get towards sort of wrapping up, I want to now spend some time just picking your brains on the kind of career defining moments and learnings that you've had that have kind of helped you to inspire you to do the great work that you're doing there, and to continue to help other women come into the same space and continue the great experience of challenging and changing the industry in the way you were encouraged to. What are sort of the standouts for you that have helped to really crystallize your way of thinking and working? And you know, this is a part before you launch into it, I gotta warn you, there's a few rules. I only have a few rules on this podcast. There's one: self-deprecation results in fines. So if you go down the road of too many self-deprecating things and you don't talk about wins and things with pride, $50 fines happen. So I'm going to warn you before you go into it. But they all get re-donated to good causes. But I'm just gonna let you know that up front before you delve into them. So what are they? They don't have to be in a particular order. It can just be things that, you know, if you were telling yourself 10 years ago that you would have found helpful to know.
The most important piece of advice that I could give, and transparently has been a lifelong, you know, journey of something I always try to live out, and sometimes it's really hard, is to deeply and completely trust yourself.
Yeah.
So in my case, I was told you can't become a starving artist. So I actually didn't go to design school. That's why I told you I majored in women and gender studies, which wasn't really necessarily better suited for a lucrative career, but I just had no idea of what a career as a creative person could look like because I didn't have any role models when I was young. And so that was an example where if I had just trusted myself and what I knew what I wanted to do, I would have just done it and not listened. And that plays out all the time, whether it's whether you should take a job or not. Or, you know, listening to your gut if you're going through some kind of toxic situation or if something just doesn't feel right or it doesn't feel aligned with whatever is true for you, whether it's how you want to live your life, what you want to do in your career, who you want to work with. Getting really clear on your intention and trusting yourself is really the biggest piece of advice that I have, and not being afraid of that, because sometimes if it's going against what you think you should do, it's really difficult.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's that fine balance, right? About having conviction in your aspirations and trusting yourself that the things that you are hoping for and are willing to work for can manifest, even if you haven't seen them done before, right? And I think those are really hard, as you say, if you don't have that lived example and that role model, which is why I wanted to start this podcast, to try and shine a spotlight on different people's experiences to try and show people that it can be done, even though it's difficult, you know. And I think that's a good conversation and a good piece of advice, as you say, for so many different walks of life and different iterations of things you come across. And if you were to say, when you were having those moments and you have those doubts when you make that transition, for after you studied that, then you went on to train yourself into becoming a creative and a designer, were there any moments where that warning about you can't be a starved artist, they play a niggling doubt? How do you silence that to stay really rooted in your convictions? Have you come up with coping tools or mechanisms or mentors? How did you get through that?
Yeah, I think so the starving artist idea kind of was killed quickly as soon as I learned design and started getting jobs. But, you know, things come up where I have doubt or if I'm following a path that isn't the safe option or the expected option. You know, starting a business is definitely not the safe option. It's a lot of risk. And it's, you know, I think it's just really important to take time for yourself and get some space so that you can remember your purpose and remember what your conviction is in, because it's very easy to get caught up in advice from other people or what you know, society is telling you you should do. And if you don't take that time for yourself, whether it's taking a vacation or, you know, and going out with friends, whatever it might be, making space to take distance from a big decision so that you can think about it clearly.
Definitely. Yeah. It's taking the time, giving yourself the permission and the space to get that 60-foot view, right? Rather than feeling the pressure to make a decision just because the intensity of the moment calls for it. Or seemingly calls for it, I should say. And sort of when you're looking forward, you know, in 10, 20, 15 years time, as you continue to be successful, no doubt, if you were to sort of look back when you, you know, finally decided to move on and go and sort of hang up your studio or to sell it on or to, you know, create something different, what would you like your legacy to have been throughout your creative career and as well as the work you're doing in sport? What's the one thing you'd love to overhear someone say about you and what you've done?
I would love for my legacy to be that I made an impact on pushing equity forward, both through creative work. So again, shaping how people view women in sport or sport in general. And then also with the people that work on my team. So having created a really positive environment for them where they're challenged creatively, where they feel really respected, where it's a really positive experience that helps them grow and achieve their goals.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's about that shaping of culture, right? And that shaping of people's identity and how they're represented and seen. And I think that is so fitting of someone with your talents and your lived experiences that is what you want to leave behind. So I just want to say a big thank you for taking the time to talk us through the great inspirational work you're doing to reimagine sport and to really help promote and celebrate women's identity through it. It's incredibly inspirational and galvanizing to see. And I just want to say, you know, all the best. And I hope to get a chance to come to New York again so that we can meet face to face and I can get to learn a little bit more about your world. So thank you so much, Carrie. And I wish you and your team at Butter all the very best.
Thank you so much, Lisely. This was really fun and an honor to be here. I love that you're doing this. It's an inspiration to all of us. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. So kind of you. And thank you to everybody for tuning in to another episode of In Her Corner. I've been with the absolutely brilliant and inspirational Carrie Sakenda. Thank you.